On today's programme, the People's Voice will hear from cost of living protesters on why they are taking to the streets. Home Truths is housing for all fit for purpose. Childcare providers on what they need to keep their doors open this winter. And we'll have Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue as he puts the finishing touches to Budget 2023. Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Oisín Smith, the Minister of State for Public Procurement and E-Government at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Eoin Óibrín, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and spokesperson on housing, and Marie Sherlock, Labour Party Senator and spokesperson for Employment Affairs, Media, Arts, Culture and the Gaeltacht. You can text us on 51551, email saturday at rte.ie, or you can tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, people are converging on Dublin this afternoon for what organisers have predicted will be the biggest protest since the landmark water charges protest of 2015. A protest, of course, that rocked the political system. Now, before we came on air, I spoke to two people who were heading into the city for that protest. We'll shortly hear from Michael Crowley, who is a 26-year-old student teacher from Galway. But the first voice you'll hear is Louise Kavanagh, who is a young working mother from West Dublin.
I have a daughter who's four. I've been working in low-paid jobs for pretty much all my adult life. I went to go to college after I was widowed, so 7-8 years ago. It was a really tough time, but I knew to get out of the poverty cycle, I knew I needed an education, and it was something that wasn't offered to me when I was a teenager. So I went back as a mature student, met my current partner, who's, now we obviously have a child together. We've been living off his wages for the last 5 years or so. And this year I made the decision to go back to college and finish my degree after having my daughter. So we've literally been living on one wage, and I can only imagine how hard it's going to be now coming into the winter. We live in an apartment. We don't have any insulation. We've electric heating. When my husband was sick, the public health nurse used to come into the house and give out to us because we hadn't the house heated. And at the time, we didn't really mind it because we didn't have the money to pay. So it was we can just put a cardigan on, we'll do what we have to. But when Blanid was born, I couldn't do that again. I couldn't face having another health nurse come into the house and judging me for not having the heating on. So I had no choice. I have to heat the house.
And you'd be watching the pennies all the time.
I could tell you how much a pint of milk costs in every shop, where I'm living in the north side of Dublin. I have to go to three different shops just to make sure I can get the most for my money in the shop. And we've had the budget for years anyway because we've been living on so little. He earned €50 over the threshold for the two of us to be able to get social assistance. I was able to get assistance before we got together because I was widowed, but I had to obviously give that up once we moved in together.
And do you feel that there's an appreciation of how people like you have to, economise and mind the pennies at a political level?
I'd like to believe that they do because there's a huge part of me that doesn't appreciate it. Now, I'm coming from a working class area. I don't have any opinion on any political party, but I just know that the ones that are in power right now, a lot of them have not grown up in the same situation as me. They've been educated. They've had the chance in life that I haven't had, but I'm not going to begrudge them. But I just don't really see that they understand fully what it's like to live in poverty.
What do you what is the thing you'll be most eager to hear from the budget now on Tuesday?
That package that we got back in May really did help us. That extra few bob off the electricity was able to help us pay for the tax for the car. I'd like to see more support given to people, especially in the level where I am. Even more access or accessibility to social welfare support for if we are really stuck to be able to get down to the social welfare. We are entitled to nothing. I couldn't even get the back to school grant because we're €50 over the threshold, and there's so many people out there like me.
What is your mood coming in? I'm kind of wondering what the mood of the protest today is going to be. Is it going to be despondent? Is it going to be angry? What's your mood about the situation we find ourselves in?
Do you know what? I think it's going to be a mix. There's not a lot of people that are angry with the government and I think it's and also being fed up. We're shouting, and we're just not being listened to. But I also think that there's an awful lot of people who will be hopeful. That I'm seeing an awful lot of, even on social media, where people are this will work. It works with the water charges. They're going to have to listen to us. That's how I'm feeling today. I'm feeling really hopeful that the government do listen to us.
In the period that we had the COVID pandemic, I was living away from home. And through a number of different circumstances, we actually had to leave the house that we were living in. One of those being that I began full-time education again. I was on the COVID payment, and the COVID payment got stopped as I returned to full-time education. I then was in a situation where I wouldn't be able to afford any rent really at all, because as a result of doing my my master's, and I'm a student teacher, I am to be available to the school. I can do substitution work and whatever, but the amount of money that we make from substitution work is precarious, to say the least.
And, I mean, how are you finding living with your parents? Is that a long-term option for you?
No, I wouldn't say so. No offence to my parents, who are lovely people, but I'm 26 at this point, and I do feel like I need to have a space for myself, you know. And, like, having the experience of moving out, it's great because it really does allow you to feel independent, to make the mistakes that you need to make to develop as a human being. But then when you come back, it does like play on your psychology, because it's, in many ways it's quite infantilized.
Can I ask you, in terms of, because there's been a lot of you know, focus on young people and, you know, generation rent and people feeling like that they don't have a future here. Like, what is your personal sense of that for people in your age group and other student teachers that you might know about?
I mean, personally speaking, I feel that the best option for me to do is to leave the country. I actually did a survey of my student teachers only last week, and I found that of the respondents that I got, I think there was only 25 respondents, 24 of them had said that they would be leaving. And people of the same age as me in my primary school that I grew up in, we had a 29-student class. Less than 10 of them still live in Ireland. And in the last 6 months, at least 5 of them have emigrated to Australia and to New Zealand.
And that was Michael Crowley there. And before that, you were listening to Louise Kavanagh. And I want to go now to Limerick, to the Fine Gael Small Business and Enterprise Conference in Thomond Park, to the most in-demand minister this weekend, Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue. You're very welcome.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Minister, I know you were listening to Louise and to Michael there, and we know from the white paper now that you have this massive 4.4 billion euro surplus to play around with on Tuesday. Like, what do you say, first of all, to people like Louise who are counting every penny and don't qualify for any support?
So what I would say to Louise is, she talked about the difference that the measures that the government brought forward in May made to her. She talked about how getting the price down of her electricity for a while helped. And I'd say directly to Louise, what Michael McGrath and myself are working on at the moment is what other measures we can bring in like that to help with that. What I'd say to Michael is, of course, we don't want this to be a country in which those who we've educated and those who can educate want to leave. And I'm really aware of the duty that we have to him and to so many of the young people to ensure that this is a country in which our young people want to work in, want to live in, and want to contribute to.
Are you, though? Because, like, the Taoiseach responded, was asked about this in the Dáil during the week, and he basically rejected the idea that there was any outflow of people from the country, that young people were taking the immigration route again. And, you know, he was pointing out population flows were going in the opposite direction. So is it appreciated or accepted in government circles that this is something that is happening with that generation now?
Of course it's appreciated. And what the Taoiseach was acknowledging is the fact that if you look at the Central Statistic Office figures regarding population in Ireland, that over now many, many years, we're seeing our population grow. We're seeing more people living in our country and making our country their home. But what he would also acknowledge, as I have, is under those macro figures, under the overall figures, there's hundreds of thousands of individual stories regarding our young people making a choice regarding where they want to live and where they want to work. And I really do appreciate the issues that both your listeners just raised there and why they're taking the action they are. It's of little solace to them to know that many of the issues that we're dealing with, you know, are compounded by a war in Ukraine, are compounded by the aftermath of a pandemic. But they're not excuses. The responsibility sits with the government to try to continue to make a difference on Tuesday, which is what we're working to do.
Housing is a major reason that many young people feel that they need to take off, that they can't build a future here. It was reported during the week that yourselves on the Cabinet Housing Committee have been warned now that Housing for All is going to miss its targets, that it needs to be revised urgently. Is there going to be specific measures in this budget in relation to Housing for All, and in particular in relation to renters?
So the detail of the budget is yet to be confirmed, Katie, in relation to what measures will be available. But what I can confirm is that housing overall will, of course, be a huge area of focus for the budget. And even from a taxation point of view, I've already indicated that I will be bringing forward a vacant property tax to try to make sure the homes that are built are used. And I'll also be continuing to implement a zoned land tax, so that land on which homes can be built, if homes are not being built on that land, additional tax has to be paid on it.
What about a tax relief for renters and indeed for landlords?
So this forms part of the discussions that are underway in relation to the budget, Katie, and I'll hope you'll bear with me when I tell you, and I hope your listeners will bear with me when I can tell you that the decisions have not yet been made, but they will be and communicated on Tuesday. And all of the government, and myself and Michael McGrath, are very much aware that those in the rental sector are particularly worried about their ability to afford their rent. And we are aware, of course, of what is happening now with the continued decline in the number of small landlords in our country. But we've many competing pressures and priorities at the moment, and we're just trying to bring that forward in an affordable and balanced way on Tuesday.
You're there in Limerick today, as I mentioned, at this conference that you've put together, a Fine Gael conference for small business and enterprise. What are you saying to those business people who are gathered there to hear you today? I mean, they are, we know, very, very concerned about energy costs and other cost of living increases that are impacting on them this winter.
So I'm saying to these business people who are employers, who are so many hundreds of people here today that are working in small and medium-sized businesses, I have two messages. The first message is very similar to what I would say to Michael and Louise and to your listeners, which is that we know we need to put money back in your pocket, given the rising prices that are going on. But then secondly, what we're also aware of is an issue that primarily was affecting income earlier on in the year is now one that can affect employment, can affect the viability of employers, particularly smaller employers. And the Taoiseach, who's here today, is really aware of that as Minister for Enterprise and Innovation. And we are looking at measures that can provide support and help to try to avoid the pressure on income turning into a pressure on jobs.
That sounds sorry to cut across you, Minister, but that sounds like we could be looking at some version of the wage subsidy scheme that we saw during COVID?
Well, the wage subsidy scheme was a measure that was brought in to deal with a very, very different kind of crisis. I mean, when I brought that measure in, with 640,000 people unemployed, our economy stopped functioning. We're in a very different place now. We have, despite the difficulties that we're discussing here, we've over 2.5 million people at work in our country, and we have a very high level of inflation. So those kind of schemes are not appropriate in scale for the kind of challenges that we are facing now. But what we will be doing, and what we will conclude our work on over the next day, is what measures that we can bring in that are affordable, that I'm confident the country can afford, that will play a role in trying to help employers with the rising cost of energy. And we're looking at different options in relation to that at the moment.
So will there be a separate package for business, separate from what you're putting together on the energy front for households?
Well, we've acknowledged overall that businesses at the moment, whether you're a farmer or whether you're running a small shop, are now facing bills that are going up that could affect, that will affect their trading, that may affect their viability. And what Michael and I are working on at the moment is what will be all the measures and how can we target them to make a difference. But we recognise here the impact this could have on our economy, just as it's having an impact on the European and the global economy as well.
Can I ask you about the Tax Commission report, Minister? You know that, and you would have heard the members of that Tax Commission coming out and saying that they were stunned, they were really disappointed at the criticism that was levelled at them, in particular by your party leader, Leo Varadkar. Are they owed an apology? You appointed them to this commission in good faith, and they delivered a report in good faith.
If I look at the commission, I believe the report that they've brought forward is a valuable contribution to thinking about some of the big choices that we need to make. But of course, the commission and the report is one that politicians are entitled to respond to. So I don't believe we're in the space of whether an apology is needed or not. I think what the members of the commission want is proper consideration of the proposals they've brought forward and a substantive response back to us.
So you have no
problem. Which is what the government will do.
You have no problem with the comment that they came straight out of the Sinn Féin playbook, that some of the measures. Do you think that's an appropriate commentary on?
But there's different
on
measures.
A professional report.
It's a very professional report, but if you look at the report overall, which is 500 pages, over 100 measures, you can look at all the different measures and say that they could be associated with different political traditions, could be associated with different policy outlooks. But I'm going to consider the commission in the round. The Taoiseach, when he made that comment, also said there's other things in the commission's report that he would agree with. And what we now need to do, which the Taoiseach and the government will do, and I'll be doing, is give a proper substantive reaction to us. But in fairness, Katie, you can't bring forward a proposal that an assessment of proposals that are fundamental and not expect some kind of a debate or reaction to happen. And I thank the Commission for their work. And what they want is proper consideration to their work, and that will happen.
So you feel that they were being overly sensitive when they said they were disappointed and stunned?
I didn't for a moment either suggest that or let alone say it.
Okay.
Not only did I appoint the Commission, I had the pleasure of working with them. I know many of them, and I thank them for their work and thank the commission chairperson for her work.
Okay.
But if one of the consequences of the publication of that work is the need for a debate, that is now underway, and their work now needs a substantive response, which the government will deliver.
OK, finally, Minister, and I thank you for your time, because I know it's a busy, busy time for you, obviously. Minister Michael McGrath has made it clear that he will not give way to any rejigging of the Department of Finance or the responsibilities in there to help you retain your role as head of the Eurogroup. Are you resigned now that you're going to have to give up that position in December?
Katie, my role as president of the Eurogroup goes all the way up to December. But I have a date in mind that's some way before December, which is the budget next Tuesday. And all Michael McGrath and I are focused on is delivering that budget, doing it well, making a difference to the issues that you've raised there. The jobs that I'm worried about aren't what I could be doing or others that could be doing. It's the jobs that we're trying to protect. And the party leaders can consider all of these matters at the right time, and then make a decision in relation to it. Michael and I couldn't be working more closely together, and couldn't be more focused collectively on trying to do a good budget. And that's what we're doing.
OK, Minister Pascal Donoghue, many thanks for giving us your time today. We'll take a break.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Now, there's no doubt that the big ticket item on Tuesday will be energy. And we'll get to the budget proposals in a moment. But can I ask you, First Minister, just that story in the front of the Irish Independent today that tells us that some smart meter tariffs that are supposed to encourage, as we know, off-peak usage and, you know, save money for customers, that they're actually more expensive in some cases than traditional plans. And this is on top of it emerging in the last week that the regulator appears to have no power at all to regulate standing charges that are also going up from some providers. Excuse me. Do we need to look again at the powers that the Commission for Energy Regulation has?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were surprised to hear that the regulator doesn't have the power to change the price or to, I suppose, approve the rates that electricity companies and gas companies charge. And I think that morally, I think it's absolutely wrong to profiteer during a crisis or during a war. It's a historic thing that people have done. And I think that the immediate response to that is going to be to retrieve those profits from those companies that have extracted an unfair amount of money out of their customers during that time. Certainly, I think the idea that all of these tariffs would be looked after by the free market might have worked in theory, but it clearly isn't working in practice. And I think it needs to be looked at again.
Yeah, but I understood we had a regulator, so we didn't have a free market. But apparently this is not the case.
No, absolutely. And not only do we need to revisit the powers of the CRU with respect to smart meters, we also need to look at other things. For example, like prepaid meters often have higher tariffs. So lower income families who can only survive by having those prepaid power meters, for example, often pay more, even though they can't. We also need to be clear that not everybody can utilise a smart meter. You have many people that could be carers, they could be families with larger numbers of children who don't have the luxury of necessarily being able to move the times of which they use electricity around as much as other people do. So there absolutely needs to be a comprehensive overhaul of the entire regulatory framework. But the key thing has to be affordability, ensure whatever measures are there, those people who are least able to pay, particularly the accelerating rate of charges, 50 increases in electricity charges over the last, year and a half, that those people are looked after. And obviously, the budget is going to be key for that.
Yeah, Marie.
Yeah, I'm just struck. I've had a number of people contact me. There's one 80-year-old woman in particular who had been offered a smart meter, and like she didn't even have a smartphone, you know. And I think we're seeing situations now where smart meters are being installed, and people simply do not know how to use them. And I think ultimately, to go back to the question about the CRU, there's a fundamental issue in this country that we now need to intervene in the energy supply market in this country to be able to try and reduce prices. So it's not about I suppose tinkering around the edges. Like, there's a very fundamental issue now that the regulator needs to be empowered to directly intervene. Like, we have a situation where a third of our gas supply is coming from the Irish coast, from the Corrib gas field. They are making enormous profits because of how energy is priced in this country. It's obviously linked to the renewables, gas and electricity are all priced at the through the one mechanism. And unless we actually have a direct state intervention to reduce the price of electricity and gas, then we're not going to have any impact for those households.
I'm just going back to the budget plans for the energy sector. A text in here from a listener. Katie, I simply can't accept that TDs with six-figure salaries are going to receive help with their energy bills. The government stance is that everyone is affected by increased energy charges. This is true, but people on big salaries can actually afford to pay these charges. Others just cannot. That's from Jane. And another texter says, hi, I'm so sick of listening to politicians spouting platitudes. My choice this week is, do I pay the bins or do I pay the ESB? And that is a big issue for people, because when you listen to people like Louise that we heard at the top of the programme, like, if we give everybody these energy credits, which appears to be what we're being told is we're going to hear on Tuesday, it doesn't this universal approach just mean there's less for the Louises and others out there who really, really need more help? They're in the homes that have less insulation. They, the energy credit will disappear faster for them than for people in the comfortable B-rated homes.
I think what Louise said was that it was really helpful to get that credit, and that if it wasn't for that, then she wouldn't have qualified because she wasn't on welfare and she wouldn't have got the targeted supports. And so it's for that reason that there are both universal supports that reach everybody and also targeted supports, which will probably be focused on particular welfare rates, people who are getting who are on the fuel allowance or who have living alone allowance or who are obviously have been identified by the welfare system as being people who are in need. So you need both. And I think that in Louise's case, it did manage to reach her.
But as a Green Green Party TD, are you not concerned that, people who don't need the credits will now have just this free extra ability to turn up the thermostat another couple of degrees?
I don't think people are going to be turning up the thermostat. But in an ideal situation, like, you could come up with an ideal plan to reach the right subsidy for 5 million people.
But there's been no attempt even to do that.
And we have to produce something that works for next month's bill. So we're on a 2-monthly billing cycle. People are going to get bills in November.
You've had a year though to design this. Over a year since we started talking about the need for energy credits.
And we brought in a credit last year. This year's system will be something different. It'll be announced next Tuesday, but it will have both a universal aspect to reach everybody who's in the cracks, but also it will have a targeted aspect to reach people who need it most.
Ona Brin, you're still saying it should be a price cap, an energy price cap.
Absolutely. And I think what's significant is the white paper that was published at midnight last night not only confirms that government has a very significant surplus available this year, it also has an even larger surplus available next year. Now, government should be reckless. They need to be very mindful and thoughtful how they do this. But for me, the real issue is the scale of the support package. And as you know, we have a number of measures specifically targeting not only households, but also ensuring that we take care of some of those structural reforms to ultimately bring down costs of energy as well. So absolutely, we want to reduce the cost back down to summer 2021 prices. But we also then want a targeted cash payment, particularly for lower and middle income families. Everybody will get the benefit of the first because bills will be returned for the winter period back to the prices that they were in the middle of last year. But there will also then be a sliding scale of cash payment from €500 but down to €100, depending on households.
There is a lot of scepticism about your figures around that price cap. When you look across the way in the UK, they're borrowing £60 billion for a 6 month price cap on energy bills there. And you're saying that we can get away with £1.7 billion. That'll cover all possibilities.
Sure, and keep in mind our proposal isn't modelled on what the Tories are doing in Britain, despite what some of the government spokespeople are saying, and it's much closer to what a lot of other European member states have done. But crucially, in addition to cutting and then holding the price per unit of electricity and the standing charge for the winter months, we're also strongly arguing for an excess profit tax, as well as structural reforms. For example, just as Marie mentioned, the separating out of the pricing mechanisms, for example, for gas and non-gas electricity generation. And the combination of the windfall tax or the excess profit tax plus those structural reforms should not only help us to manage the costs, because obviously we have to control those over the winter period, but also help stabilise and reform the market beyond this winter crisis.
The Fiscal Advisory Council say it's too risky. We should not do it.
Sure. And look, we consider all of the advice that we get on this one. We respectfully disagree, because here's the problem. If we don't do this, households will have to make the impossible choices that one of your texters just put into the chat there. Households cannot afford it. If people are choosing between heat, food and putting the bins out, that is not acceptable. And if there is a risk, and there is always a risk when you take these emergency measures, it should be government and the state. Because let's
but it's
not forget,
taxpayers, not the government will be paying for it. It's all taxpayers.
But taxpayers are already
paying. And taxpayers are already paying outrageously for
exactly.
risks that were taken in the past that we were all told were going to be.
But taxpayers are
for the
also
good of us
paying
all.
Far greater levels of tax because of the rising costs of excise and VAT. That should be put back into their pockets, both in terms of cash payments and a serious reduction over winter in energy prices.
Okay.
Otherwise, families will go without food or heating, and that's not acceptable.
Marie Sherlock.
Yeah, look, I think the thing is not everybody's going to be affected by the massive increases in gas and electricity. And like, you know, going back to like the area that I live in, Dublin 7, almost a quarter of the houses there are BER, F or G rated. There's €3,500 of a difference between heating that house in a 12 month period and a B2 house. So we need to ensure that the eligibility for the fuel allowance, so somebody like Louise, who is a low income household, can access the fuel allowance, the household benefits package. We also need to ensure that we secure jobs this winter, and this is the critical thing. We know that there are quite a number of companies now, particularly manufacturing, in retail, in hospitality, who are going through a really difficult situation. So we need to put in place a wage subsidy scheme that ensures that no jobs go under because a company is experiencing real difficulties with meeting their heating bills. Now, there needs to be strict conditionality around that. There needs to be no dividends. There needs to be no pay cuts. There needs to be no redundancies. But we need to ensure that no jobs are lost this winter because of the energy bills.
Minister, it was reported during the summer that your party leader was demanding a quid pro quo for Green Party support for the extension of the excise duty cuts on petrol and diesel, that you were looking for lower VAT rate on e-bikes, extension of the low rate on public transport. Has that been achieved? Are you comfortable going into this now? Or is there still these issues on the table as the party leaders meet this weekend?
The budget is a huge amount of money being decided. Over €90 billion is being decided. And of course, in any massive negotiation like that, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. It always goes to the wire. The staff in the departments of finance and public expenditure are in the office now, and I'll be going back there after this. And the negotiations are continuing. The party leaders will be meeting again. So nothing is agreed until everything's agreed. Yes, I do want to see the continuation of the public transport cuts. I think that the cut in the ticket price, particularly for young people and the universal cut, has been really, really useful.
Have we seen an increase in public transport usage on the back of
it? Yes, we have. We're not at the level that we were at pre-pandemic. pandemic. And but there has been, we're in the 80s, I think, in terms of returning. But it is a thing that so many people have said to me has helped them through the crisis. So not every way of giving people money to get through the winter is going to be directly related to fuel. I think that subsidising people's transport costs and subsidising their childcare costs as well will also be factors. But all of that is going to continue to be negotiated this weekend. So I do want to see, I think that childcare bills are something that are really high, that affect a lot of families.
We will be talking about that specifically in a moment. Can I ask you though, in terms of retrofitting? Because I just, a listener has just sent a text. The current cost of coal is averaging at €35 per 40 kilo bag and is due to increase to €40 next week. The fuel allowance is €33 per week. Vulnerable people will go cold and hungry and simply cannot afford the retrofitting. That's from Dara. This is a huge issue. The retrofitting was rolled out, loads of bells and whistles, and it was going to do the devil and all. And I know that the warmer home scheme is ongoing for social housing. But there are people who desperately would love to be able to retrofit their house. But there is just no way they can come up with the upfront costs.
So there's huge public demand for it. Most of the money for retrofitting is allocated to people who don't pay any of the costs themselves. Another portion is for people who get an 80% grant, so they're paying €300-400. And then another portion is for people doing a major renovation. So it can only reach tens of thousands of homes in a year. It is it's a 10-year project. And so, but there are millions of homes that are facing increased energy costs this winter. So so the retrofitting is not a magic solution for one in the short term. It has to be done. It's really important that we don't forget it. It has to be done, and it protects you for years coming into the future. But we also have to give people direct subsidies to get through the winter.
But
we can't reach everybody.
But in terms of the retrofit, are you satisfied that scheme is fit for purpose?
Oh yeah, I there's been a huge increase in the take up, a huge increase in the number of homes that have taken it. There have the fact that you can get an 80% grant regardless of your income is on the measures that are the most effective, which is putting in attic insulation and putting in wall insulation. And a huge quantity of Irish homes don't have attic insulation and should go for that. A massive increase in the number of people applying for solar panels as well.
Conor Brin.
Yeah, so there's a number of problems, and my colleague Darren O'Rourke will be publishing a document this week which outlines our kind of radical overhaul of the retrofit programme. The two biggest problems are the funding that's there, while very significant, I don't doubt that, it's not targeted enough, and therefore there's a big group of people in the middle who aren't able to avail of the supports or the retrofitting changes that they need. And therefore, it would be much better to target that money better, so to make sure more of it is spent on those low and modest income families who wouldn't be able to avail of significant retrofits because of the significant upfront costs. But also, let's remember, 20% of all households across the state are renters. 25% of households in Dublin are renters. And the scheme absolutely doesn't in any way assist renters, many of whom are living in some of the lowest energy rated homes and are some of the lowest income households we have, including working households. So there also needs to be recognition, not only to increase the budget, as we proposed in our alternative budget launched yesterday, as well as targeting it more on lower income, modest income families and lower energy efficient homes, but also changing the scheme. So, for example, 20% of the population can actually get in on those benefits, those renters who are effectively currently excluded from the schemes.
OK, you just wanted very quickly there, Marie.
Yeah, look, like the thing is, the state has ambition to ensure that, homes are retrofitted over the next decade, but the money is simply not behind it. And expecting people to find the thousands of euros to be able to retrofit their house is simply unrealistic. We need to see retrofitting as a public good, like health and education, that ultimately it benefits individual households, but of course it benefits the wider climate and our society as well in terms of carbon emission reductions. But ultimately the state has failed to put the money in place, because the reason people are on the streets of Dublin today is because they can't even meet their current utility bills, let alone even dream about putting in attic insulation or solar panels or anything like that. So we need the state to step up and put those houses
in place. We are spending over €300 million euros in retrofitting this year, which is way beyond the levels that we had. It's not the same ballpark at all. In other words, we massively increased the portion of your expenditure that you can get back as a grant. There was never an 80% grant.
But if you're going to somebody saying €5,000 to try and to ensure that they can insulate their attic at the moment, people don't have
€5,000. It's €400.
No, it's not €400 at the moment, right?
You get an 80% grant.
So yeah, and it's not €400. The balance of what people will have to top up. It's way more than that. And the key issues, people don't even have those small number of thousands, you know, any work like that at this point in time.
Okay, very briefly.
It has to be very briefly because I need to...
It's unlikely that 300 million will be spent this year because of inadequacies in terms of how the scheme is rolling out. There are enormous delays. But crucially, those people who need the support the most, either because of the energy efficiency of their home or because of their income, aren't going to get that support quickly enough. And that's really what needs to change.
Okay, I just want to touch on this before we leave the energy debate, because there is a story in The Independent today that Shell has become the second company to pull out of the Irish offshore wind energy market. We saw what happened last year, last November with Equinor, that Norwegian company pulling out. We know there's been a lot of delays, a lot of planning issues around offshore wind developments. You have one opposition in your own constituency, Minister.
I do.
Is it not time to come clean now and tell people we are not going to be able to reach that 7 gigawatts of offshore wind generation by 2030? That is just pie in the sky now, is it not?
No, it's not. And we'll be putting everything, implementation is going to be the focus. And also, I should say, by the way, that I am supporting offshore wind in my own constituency as well. I would never turn on something.
Will you be able to see it from your house?
I would never. No, I don't have a sea view, but thank you. But on Shell withdrawing, your point and your fear that I think that's a problem. We have over 20 consortia that are of investors who are bidding and taking part to build offshore wind farms. The fact that Shell, which was one player in one consortium, that consortium is going to be able to replace them. I've spoken to them, and so I am not unduly worried. We will look at it and we will speak to them and find out the reasons that they left.
Are we falling behind Scotland? Because the word on the street is that they're gone to concentrate their energies in the Scottish offshore wind development.
Well, I suppose Shell has a long history in the Scottish market, but we can manage without one company or without two companies. We have 20 consortia that are bidding, and our absolute focus is going to be on getting these wind farms built.
Two things government urgently needs to do if we're going to meet those targets. The first is increase the resourcing for On Bord Pleanála. They neither have the staff nor the expertise to deal with the applications they're going to deal with. And secondly, because some of these applications, whether I like it or Oisin likes it, are likely to be challenged in judicial review, we need a dedicated planning and environmental court. The funding needs to be provided on Tuesday so that if people do challenge and people have a right, the judicial reviews will be done quickly and appropriately by expert judges and resources. So more staff for the board and an environmental and planning court. Without those two things, we're not going to meet the targets.
OK, we'll take a break. We'll talk about childcare after these.
Tweet at SaturdayRTE.
And just a couple of texts before we move on here. How can Sinn Féin possibly know how much a price cap will cost when nobody knows how much gas will cost this winter, says one texter. Another texter says we should encourage the wealthy to give any allowance for fuel, child benefit, etc. to charity and support social housing and modular housing. That's from Jaron Sligo. And another texter says we both work full time with 3 children in childcare. We don't qualify for anything. And that's what we want to talk about now, because childcare is, of course, another area looking for budget relief as parents currently face crippling fees while providers are dealing with staff shortages and ever increasing running costs. I'm joined on the line now by Elaine Dunn, chairperson of the Federation of Early Childhood Providers. Good afternoon, Elaine.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie.
We know that the government, there's a package on the way. There's been a lot of expectation and speculation about it. What are you expecting?
Not very much, I don't think. We know that there's something coming for the parents, but unfortunately the providers have not been spoken about at all at this point. And, you know, we've all signed, well, I shouldn't say all, 90% of the sector signed up to the new core funding. So there's 800 providers who did not sign up to core funding because it just didn't meet their costs. And a lot of them are based in Dublin. And we have to, you know, look at why they're not signing up, what the problem is, the cost. We know the rate of inflation is at 9.1% today. We know that all of our costs are going up. We're worried about the energy. And then we're seeing services now announcing that they will probably end up closing up this time next year or before that because of the new core funding. They thought they were getting a certain amount of funding in, and when they went in and did all the work to see how much they were going to get, they got a lot less. So there's a lot of problems now out there at the moment. You have ECC services who are falling behind because they weren't acknowledged at all with core funding. So we have put a package together. We put a budget submission into the minister, and we asked about the FGA service providers that the capitation for the child be raised from €69 to 76 at a cost to government of 30 million. And we are still waiting on a response for that.
I spoke to you at the start of the summer, Elaine, and at that stage you were talking about hundreds of providers possibly, you know, actively considering shutting down, closing their doors. Do you think that there is some light at the end of the tunnel for those people now?
No, I don't. The fact that 500 providers sent in emails into the Department of Children and to other ministers in government regarding that they were forced to sign up to core funding under duress. I mean, you have to listen to those people. You also have to listen to the 800 providers who did not sign up. That's 1,300 service providers who are unhappy with core funding, no matter what way you look at it. That's a large number. And a lot of these providers are worried for their future. They will not have viable businesses as we stand at the moment because of core funding. And we have to address that.
I'm so conscious as well that creches in particular, you can't turn down the thermostat if you have very small children.
No, absolutely not. We're tied into CUSLA regulations at all times. So our heating must be on all day long, no matter what. Even if we're outside in the garden for a couple of hours with the children on a nice day, your heating still has to be on. So we are going to have massive energy bills because we've no choice. You can't just say to the mums, oh, send in an extra jumper or tell your staff, oh, bring in your coat and wear your coat indoors. You know, it doesn't work that way. Our food bills have gone up. Even for my own service alone, 9% my food bill went up by. You know, we just can't manage this on the core funding that they're giving us now. And it just appears that they're not listening.
And what
we welcome everything, sorry. We do welcome everything for the parents, absolutely. But you also have to look at the cost for us as providers. One thing that was never addressed from the very beginning of core funding was reasonable profit. Nobody did a study on what a reasonable profit for each service type in this country is. Why? Why was the study not done before they announced core funding and put it out to the sector? Why was it, you know, sorry, and just one more point, the fee freeze. Why was that not phased in the same way core funding has been phased in between now and 2028? Why was it all now when we have just gone through a worldwide pandemic and we're in a European war?
Can I just ask before I let you go, like there has been alternatives put forward. I know, and we'll probably hear from them in a moment. Sinn Féin are talking about reducing childcare fees by 2/3. Labour is talking about a cap on fees at €200 per child.
So I would love to ask both of them, what studies have you done to show the costs? Studies were done to carried out so that you can see what the cost of a service is in this country?
So you have doubts about the veracity of what they're putting forward?
I do, absolutely, because to all of us, we can't understand how somebody is saying that parents' fees should be €200 a month. Like, where is that coming from? What studies have Labour done to show that they can bring this in?
Okay, well, we'll ask, but I'll let you go. That's Elaine Dunn there from the Federation of Early Childcare Providers. Minister, Elaine basically saying there, and it's your colleague Roderick O'Gorman is bringing forward this childcare package, and he's hanging a lot of his political capital on it. She's saying it's just not cutting it with people like herself who are facing into a very tough winter.
Yeah, she said that, but she also said that 90% of the providers had signed up for core funding, and it's come in for the first time this year. It is a really significant thing. €221 million being provided as core funding to childcare providers. And the idea is that there are three big problems. The childcare providers may go out of business if they're not sustainable. They can't make a profit. There has to be good wages for childcare professionals. And there also has to be lower costs because people in Ireland, parents, are paying the highest childcare fees in Europe, right? So we've got three things to solve. Minister O'Gorman addressed the sustainability of the childcare providers by providing this €221 million. The pay for the childcare professionals has been set at €13 under an employment regulation order, the first time historically that that's ever been done. And I'm hoping that in this budget there will be significant help for parents to cut the cost of their childcare costs. So those three things together, I think, are what we need to address this.
Okay, I'll just give you an idea here of what's coming into us. We have a creche provider in Galway telling us that she's been asked to freeze her fees in order to receive core funding. The core funding doesn't cover the increase increase in wages or the increase in the cost of living. She says she spent 20 years building up a business, took loads of risks financially over the years, built my business, including working 70 to 80 hour weeks. I will probably close my service, which can accommodate 40 plus children, and then more will more than likely leave the sector. My building has 7 rooms. I have 3 open as I can't get staff. The problem is not the lack of spaces, it's the lack of staff.
And Katie, on that question about having to heat them and so on through the winter, there are subsidy schemes being developed, and you know, I think Minister Donoghue may have been hinting towards that. They won't be exactly the same as the pandemic subsidy payments because it's a different kind of problem, but that will certainly be addressed in the budget on Tuesday.
Okay, and another texter in. I'll be closing at the end of June 2023 for good. I'm an HA service. Core funding is my sole reason for closing. I have yet to tell my parents. Many more will follow. Owen O'Brien.
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing is we absolutely need to see in the budget additional support in terms of those increased energy costs, particularly for those energy intensive businesses like childcare. We've proposed a scheme similar to one they're running actually in Luxembourg, which I suppose twins grant aid for increased energy costs for businesses with the protection of jobs. So that way then you actually get a double benefit. In terms of the wider issue that Lane rightly raises, and we've been arguing for a number of years that there needs to be a dramatic increase in core funding. We have an opt-in scheme, as Kathleen Funchen has outlined.
She wasn't that impressed with your figures either, though.
Well, all we can do is outline the proposal. Kathleen Funchen, our spokesperson on the issue, engages extensively with the sector, and it's from, you know, several years of engagement that she came up with these proposals. For us, the crucial thing is we need to see childcare costs come down by about 2/3 over 2 years. The only way you can do that, exactly as the last texter said, is if you increase the direct state investment. That would mean an extra 270 million in a full year on top of what the government is going to propose on Tuesday. Okay. We'd phase that in over 2 years. So we would be asking fees to come down in proportion to the increased public investment, which I think would deal with that issue.
Okay.
And a 2/3 reduction in those fees. We would start doing that from this October and run it over a 2-year period because the cost of childcare was too high before the crisis and is even higher and unacceptably high now.
Marie Sherlock, Elaine there wondering where you're getting this 200 euro from and who's going to pay the rest of the bill, and how much do you know how much you would have to give to the childcare providers to make up for that?
Well, I think the first thing, Katie, is that like we've had a permanent cost of living crisis, particularly with regards to housing and childcare in this country over many years. So we want to see a dramatic reduction in the fees that parents are paying to 200 euros per child per month. In terms of how it's paid for, that is going to involve a significant resource from the state. So we're saying 275 million has to go to childcare providers to ensure that we can dramatically reduce the costs to parents. We also believe, and we've been speaking to providers over the last number of months, we hear what providers have said with regards to core funding, that, you know, it's not enough, particularly now when people are facing into double-digit inflation with regards to the utilities. So we're talking about an additional 50 million euros to go to the childcare providers, because ultimately there is a chronic shortage of childcare provider places across the country. And I see places closing down, and then parents are left, families are left high and dry.
Indeed.
So we need to, you know, we have the funding there.
I need to cut across you because I want to go to that cost of living protest now. That is not due to get going now until 3 o'clock. It's been pushed back a little bit, but our colleague Joe McGreelig is there for RTÉ News. Joe, how is the mood there?
Well, the mood is good, Katie, I'd say. I mean, we're at the very early stages of getting organising here. The people who are going to lead up the march, the cost of living crisis, have formed up on the road now, and they're sort of allowing others to form in behind them. But it's literally, I would say there's literally maybe 60 or 70 people formed on the roadway. There's about maybe 300 or 400 people here all together from various different groups. I see the Rural Ireland organisation, the Retired ESB Workers organisation. There's a number of different unions represented here, and then there's a number, there seems to be a number of sort of right-wing groups as well, opposing government policy, opposing Sinn Féin, opposing People Before Profit too, who of course are very central to the organisation of the Cost of Living Coalition. But so far, as I say, there aren't an awful lot of people here. There's not an awful lot of security either. It's a very relaxed sort of atmosphere. There aren't very much in evidence. Evidence around here, although I do see them sort of out on the edges and around the general area.
And Joe, what are the organisers saying to you there about their expectations? Like, what kind of numbers are they hoping for, do you think?
Well, they've been saying throughout the last couple of weeks that they're going to have thousands and thousands here on the march. And actually, one group that is here and that will be here, I know, in fairly large numbers are Donegal MICA campaigners. Because I've spoken to a few of them that told me that six busloads are going to be here by the time the march gets going at around 3 o'clock. I mean, the whole point of the march, Katie, obviously they're trying to highlight the fact that everybody's living with these very, very steep and crippling cost increases, and they have got to the point where it's making ordinary life very, very difficult. Okay. Now, obviously, the budget is on Sunday, so they want to send next Tuesday, and they want to send a very strong message that it really does have to address the day-to-day difficulties that people are having.
Okay. Thanks for that, Joe. We'll be watching that space, as they say. That's Joe McGreely there for RT News in the city centre. That's all we have time for. Sean Maron was our broadcast coordinator. Research was by Andrew Fleming and Emma Crawley. Sheila Neveal was on sound, and the programme was produced today by Penny Hart. Stay tuned now for the documentary on One.